We'll talk about reading today as we scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Assigned reading in schools, we hear, has changed over time. Joni Demmer Freeman will tell us how and why. After that, Garrison Keillor will tell us about the Writer's Almanac on Scribble. Welcome to Scribble, Joni.
Well, thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You're here to satisfy a never-ending question from Roald Tweet.
What's going on in high school reading?
Well, do we have that much time? I don't know.
We have a fair amount of time.
Yes. Excellent.
What is the nature of your concern or interest, Roald?
Well, when I grew up, you know, when I started teaching at Augustana, I could count on every single high school student who came to me, whether it was from Oregon or Pennsylvania or Illinois, to have read pretty much the same body of texts. And that was Silas Marner, voted the most hated book in the English language by high school seniors in America in 1959. It was Macbeth. It was Romeo and Juliet. It was, for a brief period of 10 years, The Yearling, and other books. And that seems to me, just talking to what's going on with English teachers in the school system, that seems to have changed. And I don't know whether it has. But in talking to you, I've taken a little more hope because I think the things you teach are really important things. So why don't we start by talking about generally what do you teach, the classics?
I do. Everyone thinks I'm old school, and I'm okay with that, because I think old school's good school. I think it's our job to give students a basis in the good stuff, and Shakespeare and William Golding and writers like that, Dickens. Really, they're classic because they're good.
But William Golding is...
I was going to say, wait a minute.
Well for them...
I don't hear Silas Marner.
No, and I haven't read that either, I must confess. But for them, that's considered a classic. And so the part of the problem is people are so darn prolific in their writing, everybody has a book. And it's really quite profitable. You can self-publish. So there's a lot out there. And so trying to figure out what is the good stuff as opposed to the not-so-good stuff is difficult. And we were talking earlier about the debate of, is any reading better than no reading? Well, sort of. It's difficult. I think Golding's, you know, great material, never more important than now. Shakespeare, never more important than now. We just finished Julius Caesar with my sophomores, and I said you have to understand how Anthony turns the crowd.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's an election year. Hello.
Right.
And so for some of them, they kind of come around. But I'll always lean towards the more, you know, tried and true, because they'll read the other on their own.
You know, Gary Wills has a great little book on Julius Caesar and rhetoric, and how the speech that Antony gives is point for point exactly what he was taught in school, is how rhetoric works, how you turn on certain points and so on. And you read that and you think, I guess Shakespeare was awake when he was going to school.
Yes, he was.
Because they certainly taught rhetoric, and he absorbed that lesson well. And that speech by Antony is really a great, great example of turning a crowd from one opinion to another and then firing them, mischief, thou art afoot.
Oh.
Take thou what course thou wilt.
Well, I tease the kids, you know, if you pay attention to this, you'll be a lot smarter. You'll understand logos, ethos, pathos, and on Jeopardy, you'll probably win the double Jeopardy question because all the great quotes are from Julius Caesar.
That's true. But what besides, how do you proceed? First of all, what grades are we talking about?
I teach 10th grade. A few years ago, I was teaching a world literature class, and that was more upperclassmen. But I really like 10th grade, and so I'm back doing that and happy as I can be.
Are you free to choose whatever you want to teach?
Well, they say...
Does the school have requirements? Does the profession of English have requirements?
Well, you know, we've got the Common Core, and they make suggestions as to what are good pieces of writing. We've taught many of the same things over the 11 years I've been at North Scott because they're really good. And although... we could probably change. There are some that I'm not going to drop. I may shorten my time on Julius Caesar to make room for some other things. But you have to read Act Three. You have to see Brutus, and you have to understand Anthony. So I may modify how I approach it, but we have to do Caesar.
What have you added over time? What is new to you over time? The books that you assign and the books that the kids read.
One of the ones, we were doing a lot of old dead white guys, as we joke about in the department. And we added Maya Angelou's I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, which was kind of questionable for junior high. But I think it's good at 10th grade because it has a lot of great literature associated with it because of the allusions she makes. In the world literature class that I taught, we read Kaffir Boy by Mark Matabane about life growing up in apartheid South Africa. And because of that, you get to lead into discussions about Mandela and some of the great Stephen Biko and some other people in South Africa. And ironically, Trevor Noah, who is now on the Daily Show, grew up in apartheid South Africa. And so they can start to see some connections with this historic piece that we're reading from 40 years ago to what's going on today, I hope.
Yeah, at one point I was teaching a course built on 16 books, 8 old classics and 8 modern classics, and I kind of picked the modern ones myself. That's, of course, now I can't name any of them, but Of Mice and Men was one. That was very popular. I really like that. Holden Caulfield's thing.
Catcher in the Rye.
Catcher in the Rye, yeah. We looked at about 8 books, and the idea was just to read them and talk about the things in them. What do you do when you assign a book? I mean, they read it, and then they're tested on it, or do you get into what the book might mean and see what ideas it elicits from them?
Well, I'm hoping we can do both. I mean, standards say, in our Common Core says there are certain things that they need to get. But if it's really a good piece of material, it gives you lots of opportunities for different ways to go. For example, with Julius Caesar, we talked about the speeches in Act Three, and then we had the students write elevator pitches. Which is a 1-minute pitch. They had to write a campaign speech. 1 minute is all you get. Pick who you want for president and use every trick you know. And you may use the ones that are used by, you know, Brutus and Anthony. Show us what you got. And they were great. And so they actually get to apply them. So if it's a really good piece, like some of the ones we're talking about, it gives you lots of places to go in modern, you know, with some modern things.
Let's comfort roll now. Do you do much poetry?
We need to do more.
Okay. Well, the reason I ask, I saw a statistic a couple of weeks ago, the number of people in the United States who read a poem in the last year is 6.7%, down from 17% in 1992. Mm-hmm. And Wooten blames the poets.
Yes.
For writing stuff that people can't understand.
That's right.
But why don't you do it, and why do you think we should do more?
Well, that's why I like reading Maya Angelou, because she refers to so many great poems, James Weldon Johnson and Edgar Allan Poe and some other great ones, plus her own great writing, Lawrence Dunbar. And so we need to do more. I think kids can sometimes be afraid of poetry, you know, because they aren't
in third grade.
Yes.
Well, they're not reading the difficult poets in third grade.
No, but they're reading poetry.
That's true.
And they're writing it, too.
But somewhere about sixth grade, kids begin to get turned off or scared. And by the time they get to college, you know, I mean, they're very nervous about poetry. Mm-hmm. And they shouldn't be. I mean, you know, but it's Emerson that said everyone's a poet.
Yeah. Well, show them Phyllis McGinley. He'll lighten up right away.
So what poems do you teach?
Any by Maya Angelou. I love those. A few of the Shakespeare sonnets. You know, you have to do those. Those are awesome. I'll be honest, I don't do as many as I should. Mm-hmm. But I do try and have students be aware of the poetry that is in the world around them. Like, you know, there are some pieces that we just did Of Mice and Men, and there was a rock band that did a song called Lord of the Flies. And so we listened to that, and I said, well, this book inspired this piece of pretty heavy metal.
Right.
You know, they must have read the book because they're pretty accurate. And that's poetry. Poetry is not my strong suit, I must admit.
So do you do essays?
We do a little bit of everything. We're doing more informational reading, which I think they need, but they also need the literature as well. We read essays by Elie Wiesel. We read Night. That gives us an opportunity for a lot of discussions about propaganda and brainwashing and how easy it is to get you know, talked into things that you didn't think you would be.
Do you ever get complaints from parents about humanizing ideas and things like that? Because it sounds to me like you do raise those issues, which literature raises.
Well, good literature should do that. And I'll tell kids, you know, if you think, let me know if you think I'm stepping over the bounds, but this is a scary world and you need to know some things. And if the literature gets you thinking about it and it gets us discussing it, even better. The first day of school, before we knew any of the students in our room, my colleague Margot and I did a little activity with our students, and we had them line up at the back of the room. And we said, you know, we're just trying to get a feel for you today. Tell us, you know, take a step if you would do this. Join a group that is patriotic. Every kid took a step. Join a group that supports good health. Every kid took a step. We had 12 statements. Helps you get a job. Belongs, believes in brotherhood. Does this. And I had all the questions on the PowerPoint. And they took their 12 steps. And I said, it said, congratulations. And the next PowerPoint said, welcome to the Nazi party. And they were appalled. And they remembered that all year long. In fact, we came back to that the very last day. And I said, so which steps are you taking this summer? Because I always worry when they're not around. And they said, yeah, we're going to remember that for a long time. And I said, people are going to talk you into it, but they're not going to tell you the bad stuff first. Mm-hmm. And so that was, you know, I didn't hear any complaints. I'm sure there was some, I'm sure there was discussion somewhere. But
there would have to have been
there
on
were.
That.
Yeah. You would like to think there are discussions. Yeah, it's people should talk about things. Conversations around the dinner table almost don't exist. Some families are very strong about keeping that going, and the kids are so much better off for it.
Right.
Do students at North Scott have a choice of what literature classes to take? I mean, are there different? Is there a smorgasbord, or is there world lit, British lit?
We really have it kind of depending on which. Like if you're more college bound, we have regular English and then honors. And so they read some similar things, but the honors read a little more quickly, some materials a little more deeply, some more challenging things. But we try and do a good smattering of American Lit because you have to have you know, Patrick Henry and Thomas Jefferson and, you know, the great writers. And then you also need some world literature, some modern things. I'm not a fan of the graphic novel, and so I'm a little reluctant to get into those too much, although if that gets them started on a good conversation like Persepolis, then that's good too.
Yeah, it's the role of comics has been an interesting subject since they were first introduced. But how do you put all that together? You know, when a kid goes to school and you have this opportunity for so many years to set that young person up in history, in society, and most of all to learn to think, to observe, to bring ideas into your mind, and don't be swamped by any one thing. Just keep an open mind. Be curious. That's a challenging thing.
You brought up Common Core yourself, Joni. So, and I know people who aren't in education are confused by it. It doesn't stop them from taking sides. What is Common Core and how do you feel about it?
Well, you kind of referred to what the core is all about already. You said, you know, as a college professor, you kind of have an expectation that students have read XYZ or have these types of skills. And that, I think, is what CORE is striving for. Whether you're in a small town school in Western Iowa or, you know, in Des Moines or North Scott, you should walk out. A high school diploma should mean that you have certain skills, that you're able to do certain things, whether it's pick apart a poem, any kind, or write an essay or write a narrative. And so that's what the core is all about. People have misinterpreted it by talking about, you know, what it has us teach. And I don't see it as the enemy if it's done correctly. I don't think it's the enemy because really good teachers have been doing it all the time.
Yeah.
That's what a good teacher was doing before. My seventh grade English teacher, Miss Cronin, was doing that back in the day.
If you don't have a common basis of understanding, you don't have a unified country.
Right.
You really don't. Now, around that basis of understanding, you can have arguments and disagreements, but at least you're starting from a solid base of one kind or another. But I think Roel's right. People argue about the Common Core without really knowing much about it.
Well, it sounds – it's like No Child Left Behind. Ooh, that sounds good. Oh, no, really it wasn't. Common Core, ooh, that sounds bad. No, really it's what good teachers have been doing.
Well, I think the people that don't like it, I think, like it because it – dislike it because it takes theoretically control away from the local community, right? They're telling us what to do.
They're not telling you how, though, and that's the trick. Every kid coming out of high school should know how to write a letter of application. They should know how to write an expository essay. They should know how to write a narrative. They should know how to analyze a poem. The core doesn't say which ones to do when. It has some suggestions as to exemplar texts. But it doesn't say sophomore year on the third day of the second month, this is what you do. Mm-hmm. It's just by the time you get finished, here's what you should know. What I think is sad is that we even have to have the Common Core because we should have been doing all of those things all along anyway.
And I think some of the better teachers have.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. So this is nothing new.
What's your favorite work to teach?
I love teaching I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings just because it refers to so many great writers and experiences. Of course, To Kill a Mockingbird, just because that never gets old. And I still tear up at the exact same spots every time reading the book.
You know, we're aging rapidly in time here.
Sorry.
That's all right. I want to thank you very much, Joni, for being our guest today. And I'm glad to know that you're in a classroom.
Why, thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
And now everyone will be glad to know that Garrison Keillor is up next.